Uncle Owen! The R2 unit has a bad motivator, look!
Having trouble with your droid? Your droid?
These two droids. Both are hardworking and will serve you well.
Droid! Droid! Droid, we serve their kind here.
Well, that was a long time ago. I'm sure he's forgotten about that.
Last time on We Serve Droids.
At one point, when we were talking about Lando, I made a joke about Billy Dee Williams being in Predator, but it's Carl Weathers in Predator.
Crap, that is right.
So apparently, there is a 1990 made-for-TV movie called Dangerous Passions, starring both Carl Weathers and Billy Dee Williams.
That sounds like the perfect movie.
So I think in order to make amends for my mistake, I should track down and watch Dangerous Passions.
I don't care where you're from. That is a sight that you just don't see very often.
Welcome to We Serve Droids. I'm Scott.
And I'm Chris.
And we're here with a very special Ewok episode today.
About as special as it gets.
Right. Before we get into that, though, Chris, I want to report back on a special mission I had to pay penance for mistaking Carl Weathers for Billy Dee Williams.
Oh, I almost forgot.
Yes, I have watched Dangerous Passion.
Was it everything you thought it would be?
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe.
I have seen shit that'll turn you white.
So, I strangely liked Dangerous Passion. So, the movie, like, it's just a great, like, late 80s, early 90s, made-for-TV, kill-some-brain-cells-by-watching kind of movie. It really starts to drag in the middle. But overall, I liked it, and I guess I'll just tell you, like, what surprised me about it, what I liked about it, and sort of tell you about my favorite scene from this 1990 classic.
I can't wait.
The first surprise is that Billy Dee Williams acts the hell out of this movie. I mean, he is, like, chewing the scenery on some of the scenes. Like, he's just so sinister and creepy, and all this for some, like, crappy made-for-TV movie. Like, he's, like, bringing out the big guns for an obviously, like, crap movie. And I felt like it'd be like if Kobe Bryant was playing just pickup ball at the Y, but then had that, like, 81-point game he had against the Raptors.
Billy Dee doesn't phone it in.
No, not at all. The second surprise was that there was some nudity in it, which I was not expecting since it was made-for-TV.
Was it made for, like, HBO?
No, it was on ABC. So I guess they, like, added the nudity later. Like, Carl Weathers was just like, I need my personal cut to have...
It's in my contract. I have to have at least some nudity in this movie.
Yeah. One or more nipples must be displayed. It's in my rider, section 3. And my favorite thing about Dangerous Passion has nothing to do with the movie itself, but rather the Amazon review. So there's, as you might expect, only like 3 or 4 reviews on Amazon, but one of them is by someone named Brian Mitchell, who gave the movie 5 stars, and the review just says, I love DVD, period.
Who doesn't love DVD?
Brian Mitchell loves DVD. The best scene from this movie is one where Carl Weathers has just started working for Billy Dee, and Billy Dee brings him into his garage to show him like his old classic Bugatti. And just to set the stage, Carl Weathers is wearing shorts and a muscle shirt, and he has like a towel around his neck and is like a little oiled up. Not like full Apollo Creed oiled up, but just a little bit oiled up. And Billy Dee is wearing, like, a lounge-around, baggy button-up shirt. And, like, the baggiest of all baggy old man pants that you've ever seen. It's like he picked up the pants from the tailor and said, no, I need more pleats. And I need the crotch to go down another 3 inches.
I'm paying for this material. I want all of it.
They start talking about the Bugatti in this super sexualized way. And Billy Dee tells this story about how he saw one as a kid and couldn't help touching it. Like, he had to touch it.
How can you not touch it?
And then the car's owner beat him for having touched the car.
I didn't hurt it. But never hurt it. Just touched it.
He tells Carl Weathers, oiled up Carl Weathers, he says, "Nobody touches my car but me. But you can touch my car." It's like
just two guys in a garage talking about cars. Nothing getting much manlier than that.
Right. It's weird because, like, the car is like a metaphor for his wife, but also it's such a homoerotic scene. It's just so strangely amazing. As much as I would love talking about a bad movie that nobody's seen all day, we do have to talk about Caravan of Courage.
Another bad movie that no one has seen.
So our plan for the day is to talk about Ewoks in general, what we think about Ewoks, and to cap that off with our discussion of the, I wanted to say underappreciated, but I don't think that's true, the underseen Ewok adventure, The Caravan of Courage.
You better have those units from the soft lanes repaired by midday or it'll be hell to pay.
See you in hell.
So, I guess to start off, Chris, you know, some people love Ewoks, some people hate Ewoks, some are ambivalent. Where do you fall on the spectrum?
I grew up with the, you know, Ewoks in the original trilogy, so it's, they've kind of got that sacred original trilogy sort of armor to them, where I can't really see them for the porgs that deep down I know they probably are. They're not my favorite scenes in Return of the Jedi, but I don't completely loathe them like some people do.
Right, yeah. Why do you think people do hate the Ewoks so much?
Some people, I think it's maybe the first turn of things starting to go downhill for Star Wars in a way. I mean, these Caravan of Courage doesn't really help the case, but...
It started a downward spiral that could only end at the Caravan of Courage.
Exactly. Just out of context, you know, the Stormtrooper Ewok fight can look a little hilarious and, you know, a stretch even for Star Wars.
So, yeah, I was thinking a lot about that and whether it was just totally implausible or crazy that the silly cute furry Ewoks take out an entire legion of my best troops. And I was kind of thinking that there were a couple ways that it could have, like, seemed more realistic in Return of the Jedi, this Ewok fight. But it would have been really, like, hard to do. And so I don't want to make excuses for the movie, but, like, the first thing is that the kind of combat the Ewoks engage in just really can't realistically be in a PG movie, right? They're using spears and arrows and blunt objects. This is not like shoot a guy with a blaster. Like, that's real gruesome Quentin Tarantino stuff, right?
Exactly.
So, I mean, like, it could have been more realistic, but then it would have been like a rated R movie.
Maybe that that drum at the end of Return of the Jedi had all the, you know, the different helmets in it. Yeah, maybe the heads were still in there. That's the kind of Ewoks we're dealing with.
Yeah, I do think that there's this, like, dark side to the Ewoks that you sort of have to read between the lines because they're so cute, but it's totally there.
Especially in this movie, the lack of, like, Ewok subtitles, you know, during some parts, especially early on, you leaves it kind of open to interpretation about, you know, exactly what their motivations are.
Yeah, and that's in Return of the Jedi, too. Like, you know, we never really know what they could have, like, potty mouths, for all we know. It's probably against C-3PO's programming to translate some of the words they're saying.
I like that he's acting like a giant parental filter on like a foul Ewok conversation that are spewing the entire movie.
I wonder, surely someone has done like a Ewok cut. Like, I've seen this with R2-D2, where they have subtitles and R2 is like cursing the whole time. Someone should do that with the Ewoks.
It's got to be out there somewhere.
So the other thing that I thought could have made the Ewok victory more realistic is if there had just been, like, millions of Ewoks.
Yeah.
If Ewoks had shown up from all these different tribes. But, I mean, I can see every Ewok, there's, like, a little person inside of a probably I don't know, $8,000 Ewok costume. I just made that number up. So I can see why the numbers are limited. And I don't want to make excuses for the movies for not having done that. But I think that could have made it seem less sort of like phoned in that they could actually make a dent in these stormtroopers.
Yeah, I guess if the movie were made today, we might get a Lord of the Rings style Ewok charge or something like that with just millions of CGI Ewoks.
But there's a lot that I like about the Ewoks. I mean, so I'm with you. I've sort of gone back and forth on them before, but I think now I'm kind of back in my kid mode where I like the Ewoks. I think the village is, like the Ewok village is really cool, which again, like maybe hints at the sort of dark side of Ewoks too, that they have this sort of defensive up in the trees village. Like that's not an easy, you know, it's like cliff dwellings. American Indians didn't make cliff dwellings so they looked cool. You know, they did it for like a defensive reason. And obviously this Ewok village is being so high is impervious, at least from any attack by Anakin Skywalker, because the Ewoks always have the high ground.
It's over, Anakin! I have the high ground!
It's already over. They have the high ground.
You underestimate my power!
Let's see how the high ground. This is done. You just chop off everyone's limbs.
Don't try it!
So, I've got a few, like, questions. Because I was thinking, like, we don't know, like, what the Ewok Jane Goodall, like, wrote in her report. We just don't get that in Return of the Jedi. So I had some questions that I came up with about Ewoks that I was thinking about over the past few days. And I want you on the spot, having never heard these questions before, try to answer them best you can.
Oh, this is going to be hilarious. Can't wait.
So my first question is, do you think Ewoks have genders? Like, are there She-Walks and He-Walks, or are they just all the same?
That's a good question. I want to say you see, like, a little, maybe like a little baby Ewok in Return of the Jedi, but...
Yeah, I mean, obviously they procreate, but they could have, like, one gender.
Yeah, I was wondering if, like, there was any kind of, like, female hint or whatever with whoever was holding
there's
it.
There's no boobs on the Ewoks.
Yeah, if she was wearing, like, an Ewok skirt or something that I never really noticed. That's a good question.
What's your guess? Yes or no?
I'm going to say probably yes.
Okay.
Just my gut reaction says there's female Ewoks, even if we don't see them.
Or don't know when we're seeing them. It could be the whole village is females, and the males all, like, were eaten by the Gorax. We'll talk about the Gorax later. My second question, which hints at what you said about skirts, where did the Ewoks get that dress for Princess Leia that she changes into in the Ewok village? So, you know, Princess Leia, you know, in Return of the Jedi, she, you know, gets separated from her speeder bike. Her speeder bike is blown up and she finds Wicket. And Wicket the Ewok leads her to the village. And next you see she's, like, wearing this dress we've never seen before.
Yeah, after watching Caravan, you've got to wonder, like, how many wayward people have crashed onto the planet and have been taken in by the Ewoks only to have, you know, horrible things befall them.
Oh.
They've got like a big pile of, you know, like clothing in the back from all their victims.
Yeah, this could have been the mom from Caravan of Courages. I could see that. I don't know that it's really her style. I wanted to see like the creepy guy from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Not the creepy, not the French guy from Raiders of the Lost Ark. When he tells the heroine, like, I would love to see you in this dress.
Oh,
I want one of the Ewoks to walk in really creepily with the dress. And Leia to be like, it's beautiful. And the Ewok be like,
I would very much like to see you in it.
A better one.
I don't know. I also thought, I wondered if like the Ewoks, because they don't wear dresses either. And I wondered if they could, like, you know, like the mice and Cinderella sew this thing together super fast.
Could see a Ewoks musical number while they assemble a dress from scratch.
It did make me a little worried that Maz Kanata would set up a Ewok sweatshop to outsource a bunch of jobs to Endor.
I wouldn't put it past her. That's her MO right there.
Right. If she knew how fast they could put a dress together, you'd see that Made in Endor label on every piece of clothing in the galaxy. So I like that number two, that they got the dress from other crashed vehicles. All right, number three. So the Ewoks, you know, Return of the Jedi, they capture Luke, Han, and Chewbacca, and they're going to serve them as a meal and a banquet in C-3PO's honor, because they think C-3PO is a god. Is this something they regularly do? Do they serve other Ewoks, like, at banquets for their gods?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good kind of callback to their potential violent tendencies. You know, they're just gonna throw everyone in a big pot, presumably, and serve them up as an offering to the Ewok god.
I thought they were gonna, like, cook them over like a spit, like a like the pig, you know, like put an apple in Chewbacca's mouth and spit them over the flame. It kind of makes me think they perform Ewok sacrifices when nobody's watching. It's like Apocalypto. This is a scary culture.
I mean, I'd intend to agree based on the evidence we have.
Relatedly, so they all carry around, like, spears and weapons. They apparently have catapults. Do you think these weapons are for, like, other animals, or are they for other Ewok tribes?
Until I saw a caravan, I would have assumed other Ewok tribes, because I didn't know what other kind of life existed on Endor, but man, there's a nice variety now. From what I saw in Caravan.
Let's stick to the canonical Return of the Jedi.
I could see Ewok tribal warfare being a thing.
So that leads me to my next question. So after the battle, these Ewoks presumably have, like, a huge cache of stormtrooper weapons. Do you think they just go on, like, a rampage, destroying, like, all the rival Ewok tribes now that they have, like, blasters and a scout walker?
I could see that happening. Someone, you know, bends all the Ewok tribes to their will and unites them under a single totalitarian Ewok banner.
I was thinking, like, this could quickly turn into the reason that Star Trek has the Prime Directive. Like, you give these Ewoks blasters, and this doesn't not affect their culture. My last couple questions, and maybe this is related to the lack of Ewok boobs, and I thought that Dangerous Passion would be the only time I was talking about boobs in this podcast. Do Ewoks give live birth, or do they lay eggs?
Eggs sounds funnier, so I'm going to go with that.
Okay. Given that they lay eggs, how many Ewok eggs do you think Chewbacca ate while he was there?
I'm sure he had like a sack full of them. He was trying to, you know, sneak off as they were leaving Endor. Everyone's at the big party, and he's just behind one of the tree houses somewhere, just shoveling eggs into a bag. And
he's got, like, an Easter basket.
Chewie does love the native life. For all they're in Jedi, you don't really get a ton of explanation for them. You know, they have, I forget what it's called exactly, but when, you know, 3PO is telling them a story, they have like an oral history.
It is kind of weird that C-3PO knows their language.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was like just I can hear them speak for 30 seconds, and then I can figure out what their language is kind of thing, or how many million forms of communication does he have?
Right, like, once you know 6 million, you can pick up on another one pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Ewok is a very in-demand language for protocol droids.
There's some kid on Coruscant who's like, I should not have taken Ewok in high school. 4 years of Ewok, and I don't even remember how to say, like, yub dub. Everyone else was taking Spanish, and now I know Ewok. This is doing me no good.
There's no Ewoks to translate for in the Senate.
Well, I guess we've stalled all we can to avoid having to talk about the Ewok movie.
We've done our best.
Look, sir.
What have we here?
Look, sir.
Oh, what a mess.
With the blast shield down, I can't even see.
Look, sir.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
Last time in our, like, preview of coming attractions, I said that we would watch both Ewok movies, and that was much like the best laid schemes, O Mice and Men, something that was not to be. After having watched one of these terrible movies, I could not imagine having talked about two of them for any length of time and it being entertaining.
Yeah, I think I mentioned trying to, you know, knock them both out in fairly quick succession, but man, the first one was a tough watch, and I'm not assuming the next one's any better.
Maybe it's good to give, like, a quick summary of the movie before we talk about it in any detail. And so the gist of it is that there's this family that crash lands on Endor, and mom and dad are kidnapped by the dreaded Gorax. An Ewok family finds the son and daughter, and the Ewoks and the son and daughter form the titular caravan to go find the Gorax, defeat him, and save mom and dad. Does that sound familiar?
Unfortunately. The story felt like it had been sitting on the shelf for a while, and someone just thought, hey, let's throw Ewoks into this and set it on Endor.
Yeah. I read that it was pitched as maybe like a 30-minute thing, but ABC would only go in for it if it was feature length.
Yeah, I read that too, and it showed, I think, in the film.
So it starts off in a way that sets the mood for this being more like a fantasy movie than a sci-fi movie, with this, like, intro narration. Did the narrator sound familiar to you, Chris?
I cheated. I just looked up who it was a second ago. It's Burl Ives. I had no idea.
So, when I started watching this, I thought, man, this feels like a Christmas special. And could not shake this Christmas special feeling every time the narrator would talk. Like, I half expected them to say, like, every Ewok in Ewok Village liked Christmas a lot. But the Gorax who lived north of the village did not. And then, like, you, I looked it up and I was like, holy shit, this is Burl Ives. Oh, ho, the mistletoe. Of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer narration.
I didn't put two and two together, but I was just curious who the narrator was. And I had no idea.
I think he was the only person involved in this movie that ever did anything else that we know of. Other than the guy in the Wicket the Ewok costume, who was later Willow.
Oh, yeah, Warwick Davis.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny that it has this narrator, but I think that was like partly a stylistic choice and partly out of necessity. Because he does sort of like de facto translation for the Ewoks, since they don't ever have subtitles.
And it's funny you mention Willow. The film, to me, it had a very Willow feel to it in some parts.
Yeah.
Or that's what it reminded me of the most.
Yeah, I got a big Willow vibe from it also. I think big Willow vibe is going to be my new euphemism for something. I don't know what yet. But I'm going to figure out what getting a big Willow vibe means.
It's on the shelf whenever you need it.
The other vibe I got from the narrator is sometimes it almost, because he'll like describe like an Ewok, you know, ceremony or describe what the Ewoks are doing, and I almost felt like it was a bit of like a, I got like a David Attenborough feel of like narrating like a nature documentary. Except it was never, like, as tragic as David Attenborough is when he describes some scene in nature. The mother Ewok has only enough food for three of her babies. Come winter, the youngest will die. Well, Attenborough always, like, delivers these, like, cold moments.
A mother is holding her newborn young. It's dead.
The movie starts, you know, with mom and dad looking for the kids who are missing, and they're just really given, like, a masterclass in overacting. I mean, I think this was, like, a one-take kind of movie. Like, did we get it? Good, let's go.
This thing's gonna be on the air in half an hour. Let's wrap it up.
Who was the director? Some guy named John Cordy. One Cut Cordy, can we call him that? Leonard Maltin, this is from Wikipedia, critic Leonard Maltin once said of John Cordy that he is a principled filmmaker who has worked both outside and within the mainstream, attempting to find projects that support his humanistic beliefs.
That's the most non-answered anything I've ever heard.
I mean, when you're known for such hits as The Autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, and Twice Upon a Time, you're going to earn the adulation of Leonard Maltin.
Instant classics, every one of them.
But yeah, I was really worried about this first scene. Made me think that every scene that One Cut Cordy gives us is going to be like, just the acting is set to 11. And then a large creature from apparently from World of Warcraft, comes in and, like, either grabs them or chases them away. I don't know what your thought about the first appearance of the Gorax was.
It was like, you know, I knew they were on Endor, but I had no idea Endor was full of monsters.
So Mom and Dad are now gone, and we cut to the Ewoks, and this Ewok family is in a similar situation. They also have parents looking for two lost children. There's this main Ewok, his name is Deej, and he's looking for, like, his delinquent kids, right? And so, obviously, the best way to find your kids is to launch a hang glider and go looking for them. And that's what Deej does. I watched this a couple times. Do you think they really, like, had a dude dressed as an Ewok hang gliding around?
It kind of looked that way.
Yeah, I was impressed with the hang glider shot. I think One Cut Cordy blew his budget on the hang gliding.
I mean, it paid off. I think the only shot you have of it in Jedi is just like a static shot with like a motion screen behind it when he drops a rock on something.
Yeah, it's very like it's very much looks like a model, whereas this looked like a legit, you know, they had to have a helicopter tracking a hang gliding Ewok or something.
Cordy doesn't compromise. He wants that shot. He's going to get that shot. That takes a real hang glider. We're going to get a real hang glider.
What could be more humanistic than a 1 meter furry teddy bear hang gliding around looking for his delinquent kids? It's just humanism at its core.
Exactly.
So so he finds his two kids, like Goofus and Gallant. They have Ewok names, but I just cannot be bothered to remember their Ewok names.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
And while he was looking for them, he also like sees the downed spacecraft. So Deej and Goofus and Gallant go off to find the spacecraft where Mom and Dad were kidnapped by the Gorax. And I thought this spacecraft looked a lot like the Star Wars motion simulator from Disney World.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's what became of it.
The only part of this movie that Disney will admit to existing.
They certainly seem to have tried to scour every trace of it. It was pretty hard to find to watch.
Yeah, that may be the most surprising thing about this movie is how difficult it is to get a copy of it now. Do you think this movie is now in, like, the Do Not Disturb part of the Disney vault with, like, Song of the South and, like, some cartoons where Mickey is really violent?
Yeah, all, like, the Donald Duck cartoons from, like, World War II that have, like, little cartoon Hitler in them or something like
right.
that.
Right.
Like, the sealed, like, Do Not Let See the Light of Day Again portion of the Disney vault.
This movie needs to be studied. Who do you have on it? Top men. It cuts to, like, the last surviving, like, DVD of Caravan of Courage being, like, boxed up in that huge warehouse from Raiders.
I do love DVD.
I gotta find some way to see if our buddy Brian Mitchell can review Caravan of Courage.
I want his unique take on it.
So, I was going to say this for the end. So I clicked on Brian Mitchell's name on Amazon, and he has reviewed 25 other movies or TV shows. And every single one of them has 5 stars and says, I love DVD. And they're all either like super obscure action movies or like TV shows.
The man is a connoisseur. Very refined tastes.
So Deej and the delinquent sons stumble upon the Disney World motion simulator. And the other thing to say about Deej is he has like a permanent, I just smelled a fart face. Like, he's got his teeth with, like, a face on it. It's one of those faces that Jim Varney makes a lot in the Ernest movies. Like, when the Ernest Scared Stupid Goblins lead a trail of slime, and Ernest goes, yee. That's, like, Deej's resting face.
Yeah, a lot of the Ewok resting faces varied from hilarious to a little creepy.
Do you think the Ewoks in this movie are, like, very cute?
They seem to be a little, it's a little less than Jedi.
Yeah, but it's the same costumes, right?
I mean, I assume so. I don't know if it's just because you're seeing more of them.
The Ewoks seem to look, like, not as good in this movie. And I think it's, like, a real lesson in what the kind of skill that you don't necessarily appreciate in movies until you see it done badly. Because I think so much of what makes the Ewoks look good in Return of the Jedi and bad here is just simple things like lighting and how long the camera stays on them, etc. And I thought, like, here the Ewoks have sort of, like, creepy eyes.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just because they didn't really stay on them as long in Jedi, whereas in this one they seem to linger a little bit.
Yeah, they got lifeless eyes.
Yeah.
Black eyes, like a doll's eyes.
When he comes at you, doesn't seem to be living until he bites you. And those black eyes roll over white, and then... oh, then you hear that terrible high-pitched screaming.
So, Deej apparently finds the culprit of the fart, and it's this cute little girl, Sindel, who's hiding in the motion simulator. And I kind of wonder if they ever thought about eating her, just given what we know about Ewoks.
That was kind of back to, like, you know, without any kind of subtitles, you know, in the movie, you can kind of, you can maybe interpret them having, like, a little argument at first over, you know, whether they're going to eat her or not, or who's going to eat her.
They're one protocol droid short of deciding to, like, serve her for a banquet. So, they're there, and they actually don't want to eat Sindel. But Sindel's brother, Mace, doesn't realize this, and he busts in all angry-like. And I got, like, a angry T2 John Connor vibe from Mace.
Yeah, I can see that. His general appearance kind of reminded me of Mark Hamill a little bit.
Oh, yeah. He went into the barbershop and said, "Give me an Empire Strikes Back Luke."
His outfit, too, even kind of vaguely resembles, like, the X-Wing kind of orange jumpsuit with, like, the white vest on.
Yeah, he, like, went for Luke for Halloween, got casted for having done that, and then, like, just never dropped the look, is what appears to have happened.
They're filming this over Halloween, and they're just pulling kids in off the street to play parts.
So, anyway, Goofus sort of distracts Mace, and Gallant, like, takes his knees out from under him, and they disarm and capture Mace, and put Mace on the old, like, carry the food to the feast poles.
Yeah.
And take him back to the village. Man, this character Mace, I just could not stand him in this movie.
Yeah, I think he was the source of a lot of the artificial lengthening of the movie, just with his staunch opposition to just about everything the Ewoks are trying to do there early on, and just kind of throughout the movie.
Yeah, it's really weird. He's, like, very insistent that the Ewoks are, like, stupid animals, even though they're obviously doing, like, very intelligent things throughout the entire movie.
Exactly.
So, the first, like, bulk up the plot sort of side quest that the movie does is, like, Sindel gets really sick, and the Ewoks have, like, medicine for her. They give her some medicine, and they run out, and they've got to get more medicine, and they go out, and they do this whole, like, little quest for the medicine. They get it, they mix it up, and they give it to Sindel, and then she gets better. And then the next morning, Mace is like, "Hey, Sindel, let's leave." And she's like, "No, the Ewoks can help us." And he's like, "No, they're just stupid animals." It's like, they just, like, performed, like, advanced pharmacology, you idiot. I don't know. I don't want to belabor any scenes in this movie. Do you have anything to say about the whole Sindel gets sick subplot?
No, not really. I just want it to be out of my life forever at this point.
There was, like, one part that I thought was kind of funny, which again has to do with how annoying Mace is. So they have to go, like, find the medicine from some, like, tree in the middle of the forest. And while the Ewoks are, like, you know, putting, like, a maple syrup tap in the tree, Mace looks over and sees, like, a hole in another tree, and there's, like, a little, like, Hatchimal in the tree making, like, low battery sounds. And this idiot Mace, instead of just asking the Ewok what it is, or just looking at it, like, reaches into the tree to grab it, and of course, the thing, like, tries to eat his arm, and the Ewoks all have to, like, rescue this idiot, and I just would have loved this movie a lot more if his hand had gotten bitten off. Maybe, like, you know, Mace obviously has his, like, Empire Strikes Back Luke haircut and jacket. He's thinking, like, I need to lose my hand. I gotta get that Luke robot hand.
I need the stump to go with it.
Yeah. Gotta get those stumps. I told the barber to give me a Luke, and he stopped one cut short. So anyway, so the next morning after Sindel's better, she and Mace, like, sneak off, and they, like, get chased by a giant, like, warthog.
Yeah, just another member of the Ewok, you know, ecosystem that we weren't familiar with.
Yeah. It's all top of the food chain on Endor. So it's like a claymation warthog, right?
Yeah, I'm almost certain. They blew their budget on the hang glider, so...
So, they have to, like, sleep in, like, a little cave or something until the next morning. Deej and the kids fight off the warthog with some spears, and Wicket, like, blow darts it to death. So, the only reason I bring up this scene is that the warthog was carrying their dad's life alert.
I've fallen! And I can't get up!
Like, so all the, like, family have these little, like, life alert bracelets, I guess, to say if they're in danger.
It pulled it out of its, I think it's, what, like a tooth or something? Like, right on, like, right near the end of its mouth?
Oh, is that where it was?
Maybe. I may be misremembering.
Well, that'd be pretty ominous.
Yeah, I think he said something to the effect of, like, where are they? Or... Well, I've got an idea.
Why is Dad's clothes on this monster's teeth? What could have happened? They ask Deej's sons, and it's like, Goofus says your parents were definitely eaten by the warthog. Gallant says there may be hope. Gallant doesn't let Mace carry his blaster. Goofus says, sure, kid, carry it. So, they take the life alert.
Life Alert saves a life from a potential catastrophe every 10 minutes.
To the village mystic from Return of the Jedi for, like, level 5,000 Star Wars nerds, the Ewok Logray.
Ah, nice.
So they go to Logray to find out, like, where their parents are. And I thought that this was putting a lot of faith in a guy who thought that C-3PO was a god. But... Logray gets out a giant glowing dreidel, and he spins the big dreidel, and they can kind of, like, it sort of projects the image of their parents, like a Hanukkah miracle, and it turns out some big monster has them, and Burl Ives informs us that they're being held captive by the dreaded giant Gorax. And even though no Ewok has ever returned from the land of the Gorax, the Ewoks have decided that they're going to help these ungrateful kids, one of them who thinks they're all idiots, go find the Gorax.
It's a testament to the Ewoks' loyalty that they're still willing to help Mace at this point.
I feel like it was a testament to our loyalty to this podcast that we watched it this far.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest, I didn't do it all in one sitting. I had to take a couple of breaks.
I just had to take a couple of drinks.
That's what I was talking about.
Right. This is the point where they form the titular caravan of courage.
Yeah, the Fellowship of the Ring, yeah. Or the Fellowship of the Life Alert.
Right. Right. Yeah, take the Life Alert back to Mount Gorax and throw it in.
For a free Life Alert brochure, call 1-800-661-2332.
And so the narrator informs us that before going, they do have to form... It is like a very, like, Lord of the Rings-esque, like, fellowship scene. Everyone who's on this, like, party to go save Mom and Dad is going to be given one of the sacred totems of the legendary Ewok warriors. And so Deej gets... this is such a weird scene. Deej gets the White Wings of Hope, which is like a Native American headdress. And like Goofus gets like the Red Wings of Courage. I guess Gallant gets like another headdress. I don't really remember. Wicket got the magic walking stick.
Oh, the walking stick's my personal favorite.
Sindel gets the candle of pure light, which is like all of like 1 inch.
Yeah.
They've used up most of the pure light.
It's very pure at this point.
And Mace is like real psyched about what he's going to get. And Mace gets a rock.
Do you remember the, like the Charlie Brown Halloween where they're trick or treating?
Yes.
That's the first thing I thought of.
I have in my notes, drop Great Pumpkin sound clip into podcast here.
I got 5 pieces of candy. I got a chocolate bar. I got a quarter. I got a rock.
I was going to suggest it if you...
Most obvious joke for this whole movie. I got Blue Wings of Hope. I got Red Wings of Courage.
I got a rock.
And to continue, like, how much I hate Mace in this movie, he's super, like, pissy about getting this rock.
I think he only hangs onto it for about 5 seconds before just throwing it on the ground.
Yeah, so... There's two other sacred totems that weren't distributed. One of them is like a crystal. And Mace reaches for the crystal and is like, oh, I'm going to get this crystal. And Logray is like, no, you're going to get this rock. And you're going to like it. And he throws like a big fit. Like, I wanted the crystal. Why do I have this stupid rock? And he like throws the rock on the ground. Like, I hate your... Like, what an asshole. This is a legendary sacred totem. Like, they worship these items. Can't you at least, like, pretend? Like, these people are helping you find your mom and dad, and you're, like, throwing their sacred objects on the ground.
Exactly. Like, they've all essentially just signed up for a suicide mission.
Right. Meanwhile, he's got, like, the Shroud of Turin, and he's, like, wiping his ass with it. He's like, here, take this, your sacred totem. Like, what an ungrateful jerk. And the weird part is, the rock isn't even the worst totem. What the last totem is a tooth. Like, it's just a tooth. And he's all mad that he got the rock. And it's like, look, you could have gotten this incisor over here. I don't know, this is such a weird scene because, like, it sets up some sort of expectation that all these items are going to have some sort of a payoff, you know, some sort of magical payoff. The walking stick does. Later, Mace, the scene doesn't make any sense, but Mace gets like stuck under like a lake.
The magical death water?
It makes no sense.
I think they just wrote in a trap and like, use the walking stick to get him out.
The candle also does something that I don't really remember. But the tooth does nothing. You know? If this was like the fellowship scene and they're all like, you have my sword and my bow. And so it's like, and my tooth. Like, you don't invite that guy to go to Mordor.
He's not really committed.
They don't have a caravan member for the crystal or the tooth. But Burl Ives tells us that they've got to persuade 2 more people to join the caravan.
You've got to talk 2 more people into your suicide mission.
So the first person they encounter is like a woodsman Ewok. And they try to give him the ivory tooth to join the caravan.
I mean, I'd be sold. Offer me a tooth and I'm in immediately. That's all it takes.
This particular Ewok, I don't know, he's got another Ewok name. Chuka Trock.
I meant to mention this earlier. Wicket is the only Ewok with not just a first and last name, but also a middle initial. I thought that was hilarious in like the opening credits.
Wicket W. Warwick. The W stands for something like totally not Ewok-y at all. Like, it's like William or something.
William!
what was my, like, new euphemism gonna be? I've already forgotten that.
Oh. This is horrible.
This is not our best work.
To be fair, it's not Lucas's best work either.
Something about a short something. I don't know. Seemed like I was setting that up for a joke later, but much like the ivory tooth, I just never paid off that setup. The caravan tries to convince the woodsman to join their quest, and apparently Mace tries to impress him by throwing a tomahawk at a tree. Was he carrying a tomahawk the whole time?
Yeah, they never really addressed where that came from. I just, like, here, check this out, guys.
Yeah, it's actually, like, a really impressive feat. He throws this tomahawk and it, like, into a tree pretty far away, and it just, like, plants right into it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are you so angry about not getting a crystal or a tooth when you're packing a tomahawk the whole time?
Exactly. Just ungrateful. Ungrateful.
The woodsman Ewok kind of does that, like, he's like, oh, you think that's cool? Watch this. And does that, like, thing from Robin Hood, where Robin Hood, yes, like, the first guy shoots the bullseye, and then Robin Hood, like, bullseyes the arrow on the bullseye.
Oh, yeah. I was going to make that joke, too.
There are only a limited number of things you could say about this movie.
Yeah.
You got to jump in before I hit him. And this guy is, like, an axe-throwing, you know, king. He is, like, Mel Gibson in Patriot. You just take out a whole band of redcoats with a single tomahawk.
What did I tell you fellas about shooting?
Aim small, miss small.
Chris, do you want to skip about 18 minutes of podcast and a bunch of worthless scenes and go straight to the lair of the Gorax?
Yes, absolutely.
Awesome.
Hey, you want a wonga? They want a wonga. They want a wonga.
Do you wanna let go?
So in the scenes we've skipped, our caravan / fellowship has added a Ewok who wears like a David the Gnome hat, and also a little Tinkerbell-like fairy that lives in Mace's pocket. So our caravan enters the basement of the Gorax's castle. And at the basement, they leave behind one of Deej's delinquent kids, and Sindel, and Wicket.
Guess what? The Alamo was built without a basement.
And the rest of the fellowship journeys on, and they arrive at the chasm that only a faithful person can cross in Last Crusade. Only lucky for them, one of the spiders from The Hobbit has woven like a ropes course that goes across the chasm. So, for an excellent team-building activity, the caravan goes across the chasm, and like a giant spider almost gets Deej. But David the Gnome like hypnotizes it with her crystal, and it falls down. I don't know. What did you think about these spiders?
It felt like another one of those elements where they just kind of pulled it off the shelf and, you know, hey, need to shoehorn some more content into this movie.
I think they also literally pulled it off the shelf because it looks like the kind of thing that you would find in one of those Halloween stores that, like, suddenly appears in, like, a Payless Shoes, like an abandoned Payless Shoes outlet, like, around, like, October 3rd.
It goes back to my Halloween theory. They're just pulling kids and Halloween decorations in off the street. I think we're getting to the bottom of this movie.
The hypnotized spider then like goes after the kids who got left behind, and Wicket knifes it in the thorax.
These violent Ewok tendencies showing through again.
Right. This is the second monster that Wicket has killed. I don't know why they leave him behind.
That's why he has two full names and a middle initial.
The W stands for Will Kill. Wicket Will Kill Warwick. They go up to the Gorax's lair, and it's really turned into like Jack and the Beanstalk at this point.
Fee-fi-fo-fum.
Yeah, what would you have done if the Grex jumped out and was like, fee, fi, fo, fuck, I smell the blood of an Ewok.
I would have had a lot more respect for this movie, actually.
That'd have been like the nudity in Dangerous Passion. It'd been like, whoa, it's made for TV, really upped its game. Yeah.
So yeah, the ears in the Gorax kind of reminded me of Gremlin ears from Gremlin. Kind of looked like he was like been piecemealed together a little bit.
Don't let the Gorax eat mom or dad after midnight. I thought the Gorax looked like if a Klingon had been bit by the American Werewolf in London.
Is the Gorax like a species, or is it just one guy?
Is that guy's name Gorax?
Is Gorax the plural form of...
I kind of took it to be that way, that there were, like, multiple Gorax that, like, the Ewoks hate. But then when he had a magic castle, I was less sure if there was just one Gorax or not.
There can be only one.
It's a Highlander. I've totally lost my train of thought.
So is this movie.
Yeah, I kind of thought maybe, like, there was, like, a species of Gorax that were, like, mortal enemies of the Ewoks.
I could see that.
1,100 Gorax went into the water. 316 Gorax came out. The Ewoks took the rest.
I like how the Gorax had the mom and dad in, like, a little cage, like, kind of hanging up.
Yeah, what was he planning on doing with them in that birdcage?
I don't know. I like the thought of like the Gorax just sitting there, like making like a little cage for people.
Right. It's like it's actually this whole thing is just for him to get his like weaving merit badge. Yeah. This cage isn't woven well at all. One of the delinquent sons like distracts the Gorax, and he chases him around and. The other Ewoks, like, MacGyver a catapult together and use it to go get mom and dad down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the Gorax comes back in and chases them, and the, like, Mel Gibson Tomahawk Ewok starts, like, hacking away at the Gorax's foot
yeah.
with his axe.
Yeah.
And Mace, like, lets Tinkerbell out of his pocket. He starts, like, tickling the Gorax's eyes while Mel Gibson's, like, hacking away. And the Gorax is, like, flailing around, which causes a rock to fall on the Mel Gibson Ewok, mortally wounding him. I thought this really completed Mace's John Connor character arc.
Also.
When he's, like, crying about the Mel Gibson Ewok dying.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
No, it'll be okay. Stay with us. It'll be okay.
I have to go away.
No, don't do it. Please, don't go.
He gives him the thumbs up just before he goes.
I know now why you cry, but it is something Ewok eyes can never do. And so he dies without his magic tooth ever doing anything.
His greatest regret.
Right. If only I had gotten the rock. I'm going to edit this out, but my only regret is that I have bonitis.
I'll leave it in. That's hilarious.
I like all these 2%er jokes.
Yeah.
Our jokes are like so geared to the 1% that Bernie Sanders is going to launch a political campaign against us.
We'll be on his radar along with Disney. We'll be the only podcast sued by both the Sanders and Dist.
Right. The Gorax resumes its chase, and the Ewoks use the old, like, trip rope to bring them down.
Yeah, I mean, they're master trippers.
Right. To much better effect than they did with the Scout Walker in Return of the Jedi.
It would work on a Gorax, but I think that's about the upper limit for what you can expect to be able to trip when you're a 4-foot-tall teddy bear.
So... the Gorax gets tripped, and then, like, the David the Gnome Ewok uses her magic crystal to bring, like, a stalactite down on the Gorax, and Mom, like, blasters him to death, and he falls down in the same chasm that Gandalf and the Balrog fall down.
Yep. He's definitely dead for sure. Like, no way. Not going to pop back up in about 20 seconds or anything like that. He's gone. He's goner.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's all turn around, have a conversation. Let's make sure the camera stays on the chasm for a good long while. They're all, like, commemorating, like, the Mel Gibson Ewok. Because they're all like, oh, what happened to Mel Gibson Ewok? And Mace says, like, he died for all of our lives.
Oh, I was just make like a crass, you know, Jesus Ewok joke or something like that.
That's okay. Also in my notes.
I thought better for half a second, but
this is where my wife, who's been like doing work while I watch this movie and rolling her eyes for a solid 90 minutes at the decisions I tend to make with my life, looks up after the Mace says he died for all of our lives, and she says, like, are they talking about Jesus?
In a way. Well, I don't know. I think Jesus abandoned this movie long ago.
Jesus.
You said it, man. Nobody fucks with the Jesus.
So the Gorex fulfills the horror movie cliche and has now climbed out of the chasm of despair to other side with Sindel and Wicket and Goofus. And Mace takes the failed Mel Gibson Ewoks' axe.
Him small, miss small.
And hurls it right into the Gorax's back, who is now extra dead and falls down.
It's a good thing he had all those axe throwing skills in his back pocket.
Yeah. That's the only thing the movie sets up and pays off.
Yeah. I think you're right. It's literally the only thing.
And the setup isn't, like, the setup itself makes no sense that he has this axe throwing skill. Like, are they like a family of like circus performers?
Yeah, they're the flying Tawanis or whatever their last name is.
So they all go back to the Deej family hut and celebrate. The end.
Now, like, what got me about the ending is they're still marooned.
Right. Like,
no one shows up at the end to rescue them off the planet. They're all alive, but they're essentially marooned on a planet with, you know, teddy bears they can't talk to.
I was wondering if either Goofus or Gallant was one of the Ewoks that pulled Vader's helmet off the funeral pyre.
And sold it to Kylo Ren.
Right. Galliot respects other cultures' funeral rites. Goofus desecrates a grave.
Oh, it's perfect.
Once I saw that the Gorax was so big, I wondered if those Ewok traps that have the two logs that come and smash the Scout Walker in Return of the Jedi, I wondered if those were really Gorax traps.
Oh, man.
Because I would love to watch a Gorax get his head smashed by one of those logs.
Yeah.
Like a melon at like a Gallagher show.
Exactly. Maybe the Goraxes are justified in their violence towards the Ewoks if they're just being like Rambo booby-trapped constantly in the forest.
Right. The Gorax was actually like just trying to like feed mom and dad while he was like gonna fix their spaceship for them. Gorax are actually herbivores. They would never eat mom and dad, unlike cannibalistic Ewoks.
The Gorax just likes three things: fixing spaceships, knitting cages, and eating plants.
So when I first saw the Gorax, I didn't realize he was that big.
He's got a Snoke effect going on. You don't know what size he is.
That's exactly what I was going to say. He turned out to be the size that Snoke's projection was in Force Awakens.
Maybe the Gorax survived and he's really Snoke.
I was thinking that Snoke's throne was like salvaged from the Gorax castle.
And Endor is really where Starkiller Base was.
On a scale of 1 star to I Love DVD, how would you rank the Caravan of Courage?
Well, I do love DVD, but I'm feeling generous. I'll throw it 2 stars.
I'm giving it 1 star.
I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
I'm trying to find my favorite quote I saw on the wiki page for this. Oh, here it is. With the Ewok adventure, Lucas assumed full control over the content and production of the film to ensure good quality.
Oh, God. Ooh. Maybe I should not have been given One Cut Cordy such a hard time. What would have been a better Ewok movie? Like Apocalypse Now?
The horror.
Marlon Brando is in like a Ewok tribe.
The horror.
And is telling Martin Sheen the story about like the Ewok village getting inoculated and the Ewoks hacking off the arms of all the Ewok children that were inoculated.
Then I realized they were stronger than we.
It's a shot for shot Planet of the Apes remake with Ewoks.
Like a new, like the new Planet of the Apes? Or like old one?
I was thinking old one, like with Charlton Heston.
Okay. You won't, like, get your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty Ewoks. You weren't thinking Woody Harrelson going, this is truly a planet of the Ewoks.
I think either could work.
I would love for it to be a rule that every movie has to have a scene where Woody Harrelson says the title of the movie.
Hey, we may get that in Solo here in a little while.
Right. Is your name Solo? And then he like spikes the camera and winks. I would love that in every movie. I'm here to see Citizen Kane. This is a real nice list, Schindler.
I just imagined Woody Harrelson like in an SS uniform. I never thought I'd ever do that.
Well, Caravan of Courage has taken us to a dark place.
I don't think we had any chance to begin with.
This is going to be one hell of an edit.
That's probably what they said when they finished shooting Caravan of Courage. One shot Cordy called a wrap. This is going to be one hell of an edit.
So this episode hits April 1st. And for May 1st, in order to get ready for Solo, a Star Wars story, we're going to have a special Han Solo-focused episode.
Assuming the editing of this episode doesn't break Scott completely.
So on that one, we will look at the character arc for Han Solo. Maybe we could come prepared with like our two favorite Han Solo scenes.
Absolutely.
You want to do that, Chris?
Yeah, that sounds great.
And throw in some predictions for Solo?
Yes, absolutely.
I think I want to do this for our predictions. I think this will be fun for a month from now. Is we'll play like a, like, almost like a prediction fantasy draft. So come up with like your predictions you think are most likely to happen, and we'll take turns making a prediction. And then when the movie comes out, we'll see who won, like who got most of their predictions correct.
Yeah, I like that idea. That'd be fun. Unlike this episode. There's no way anyone's still listening at this point.
Oh, no. All right, Chris, I will talk to you next month.
Can't wait.
All right, it's been fun. See you later.
Right, have a good one.
If you've enjoyed We Serve Droids, please consider supporting our show by telling someone about it, someone who likes Star Wars or movies or pop culture, or post about the show or tweet it out. You could also give us a Brian Mitchell-esque 5-star rating on iTunes, and you can contact us by emailing weservedroids@gmail.com. Lastly, Chris and I would like to thank Computer Music All-Stars for letting us use and abuse their music for our show. Thanks for listening.
But with Life Alert, when emergencies happen, one press of a button can get you help fast.
You guys look like... What do they look like, Jimmy?
Dorks. They look like a couple of dorks.